you think your world is safe. It is an illusion. A comforting lie told to protect you. Enjoy these final moments. For I have returned.
So, shall we begin?
All right, ladies, buckle up! It's showtime!
Have you lost your mind? I mean, how is it that you can disrespect a man's ethnicity when you know we've influenced nearly every facet of white America, from our music to our style of dress, not to mention your basic imitation of our sense of cool. Walk, talk, dress, mannerisms. We enrich your very existence, all the while contributing to the gross national product through our achievements in corporate America. It's these conceits that comfort me when I'm faced with the ignorant, cowardly, bitter, and bigoted who have no talent, no guts. People like you who desecrate things they don't understand when the truth is you should say, thank you, man, and go on about your way. But apparently, you're incapable of doing that. So, and don't tell me to be cool. I am cool! Racial epithets. Why does it always come down to that?
Can I find my producer? Maybe I should get him on the phone. And Teresa on the radio live 1 minute after the hour on this, the 7th of January, 2013. You notice I haven't had the urge to say 2012. I'm just so over it. Maybe I was looking forward to this. Anyway, welcome to the week. A boring and very, very somber news day. I mean, you know about the whole, you know, the president nominating head of the CIA, you know, that whole debacle. It's too boring to bring up. It's too boring. It's so damn boring right now, The Bachelor seems more interesting. So for all of you watching that show, I can't tell you to get a life because there's nothing happening today. It's a Monday. It's same old typical Monday. That's what you can expect. But don't worry, I've got some very, very weird news to report today. And that is I found my new, how do I put it? What's the best way to put it, Mary? My new hobby. Guilty pleasure. That's the best way to put it. Oh, you know I'm talking about it. Folks, I think the critics, I think the people who have been bashing this poor 7-year-old girl, I think the people who have been making these claims are out of their goddamn minds. That's right, I'm talking about Honey Boo Boo. I like this kid. And here's the reason why. Because there's no malice in her heart. There's no malice.
Even with all her 12 fingers.
Yeah, she's got, what does she have, 12 fingers or 11?
She's got
two thumbs on either hand?
Yeah.
I don't thought it was only one.
No, they're on both.
Oh, God. Okay, well, see, I'm not going to rag on the baby. Normally, I would use a term like circus freak, but I'm not going to go there.
You know, I don't know what it is, but it could be somewhere down the line. Incest, not purposeful incest.
You think,
you know, they live in the country.
You think that
so
something
everybody's related to somebody.
Right. So you're saying that something, there's a genetic inbreeding somewhere down this
there
girl's line.
That may be. It's not very uncommon. It's not as uncommon as people may believe it to be.
Right.
For children to be born with an extra thumb or an
right.
extra pinky.
Right, right, right. Well, and what we're talking about, if you haven't watched this show, of course, here comes Honey Boo Boo. Honey Boo Boo, Alana, which is her name, because I've never known her name. I've been hearing her referred to as Honey Boo Boo for so long, I forgot the child had a name. But her name is Alana. What I found interesting about her is that the only thing this girl ever talks about, which is a clear example that this comes from her family.
Well, at least on the episodes that we watched.
Well, we watched a crap load of episodes.
No, we didn't. We only watched two or three.
I think we watched, maybe three to four. But we watched. But it was enough for me to watch. All I kept hearing out of the 7-year-old girl's mouth.
And wait. Let's say a big shout out thanks to Julie.
Yes. Absolutely.
Julie posted it on Facebook that she was watching it, and I said, "Oh shit, let me turn it on real quick because I wanted to see it, and I never get a chance to see it. I've only watched maybe a couple of minutes of an episode before, but it wasn't really as funny as I thought it was."
Yeah, you thought it was supposed to be rip roaring hilarious. Yeah, right. Embarrassing.
Like.
Right. You thought it was going to be embarrassing.
Redneck ridiculous.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, it wasn't that at all. The point I was trying to make was that the one thing that I kept noticing coming out of this 7-year-old girl's mouth, and I know this has everything to do with how it is that she's raised. All the girl ever talks about is love. That's all she – a word that comes out of her mouth more often than not is love. I love, 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 love. And what's Sugar Bear, the dad?
Sugar Bear, yeah.
All he ever talks about, all I ever hear this guy talking about is family. Got to do something with the family. It's 4th of July coming up. Got to do something good with the family. Let's put up a pool. Family's hot. Let's, you know, we should put up the pool together as a family. All I keep hearing about these people are family, 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 and love, 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 love. And I'm watching this. I'm going, okay, I can see how they're interesting, you know, because, you know, they'll talk about eating food and farting, you know, some of that other stuff.
The fart ghost.
Yeah, the fart ghost, you know. They making fun of Uncle Poodle, you know, the gay uncle, Uncle Poodle. But here's the 7-year-old girl, and I'm looking at
an entire family,
right.
Actually.
Well, yeah, but I'm just saying, but I'm looking at the 7-year-old girl here, Honey Boo Boo in particular. Here it is, I'm looking at a 7-year-old girl who's supposed to be living in the backwoods, according to most critics. She's supposed to be a country bumpkin, right? The dumbest and the stupidest of them all, slope-headed idiot. And here this girl is. She's got a gay uncle. She's got a big fat mama. She's got an underage teenage sister with a baby. The baby's got 12 fingers, 2 thumbs on either hand. And you don't hear one adverse, disgusting thing coming out of this 7-year-old girl's mouth. Nothing remotely ignorant. She doesn't call her uncle a fag. She doesn't make fun of him being queer in any particular way. In fact, the girl said on yesterday's episode that I watched, everybody's got a little gay in them. Now, of course, I don't agree with that, but this is how she's not marginalizing his homosexuality or making fun of it. She's reconciled with it as a 7-year-old. And she doesn't ridicule him behind it. And she loves him to death. She tackles with him, has grass fights and throws things. And she's out there playing, having a good time. How could this girl be what people consider the
demonized.
Dread? Yeah, how could she be demonized? I'm not getting it.
I didn't see anybody, and I never looked at it that way until you pointed it out, but mm-hmm. I didn't see anybody on the whole show. Nobody ridiculed one another. Nobody had any bad words to each other. They may not be the average city living or suburb living family. Yeah, they might burp. They might fart. They might not have the best manners
according
to other people. But in the South, I mean, burping at somebody is, you know, there was a joke about Stafford County right here in Virginia, which is, you know, 10, 15 minutes from where we live south. Mm-hmm. They used to say that if you burp at somebody, that was like a
compliment.
That was a pickup line.
Oh, really?
Like, hey, I like you, burp, you know, because they just, you know, country, backwoods, you know, they like to, you know, put a pig on a
spigot
or whatever. You know, dig a trench in the ground and roast the pig and shit.
Right.
So those are normal. The things that they do are normal for them.
Right. Well, that's their way of life.
And just because what's normal for them may not be normal for us,
mm-hmm.
doesn't give us the right to demean them, because they all love each other. They don't, you know, nobody's calling mom a fat ass and all this, and, you know, nobody's making fun of each other. They all genuinely really love each other. And when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, who do you have in the end? Is you and your
family. Family, right? And you know, it's funny to see that, you know, with all of the things that, you know, there's a great picture that I saw today online Honey Boo Boo and her family. And Honey Boo Boo's got this one T-shirt on that says, "Haters gonna hate. Haters gonna hate." And you know what? I think about that now, and having watched it, because, see, you probably never ever hear me make a joke about Honey Boo Boo, other than the fact of hearing what other people have to say. Now, I watched
and
it.
And the little bits and clips that
Yeah,
they
the clips
show
that
TV,
you show, exactly.
They show it on TV. They promote it like these are stupid,
right,
ignorant, backwoods, dumbass people. And I don't care how ignorant and stupid anybody thinks that they are. They genuinely love each other. And at the end of the day, again, that's the only thing that
right,
really matters.
That's what I'm saying.
They're having a good-ass time. They're not worried about who's got on Manolo boots. And, you know, a Fendi bag, you know, they don't care about any of that shit.
I'm just amazed at how much ridicule people throw at this family. And having watched it, I'm sitting up here the whole time, and I wasn't feeling, you know me, I'm not one of these gushy, mushy people who's like, oh, no, I'm not. Why would you even suggest that to people that I was a mushy gushy?
Newsflash. I live with you every day. I know.
Well, my point is that I was stunned to see that. Now, the reason why I bring that up, and again, like I said, I'm a Honey Boo Boo supporter. Now on, let me put that on the record. I don't care who out there is ripping on Honey Boo Boo. You can go to hell, because as far as I'm concerned, I got a lot of credit. I also have to give a shout out to Sugar Bear, the dad.
Only Alana's dad.
Right, he's only Alana's dad. And one of the episodes we also watched, one of the older girls was talking about Sugar Bear and how she feels about him as a father.
Dad.
That's her dad. And that's the way she looks. She doesn't really care, you know, what anybody thinks. You know, that's just the way that it is. And that's it. She doesn't look at it any other way. And he loves those kids. And he loves the mother. Who? What is her name?
I don't know.
I never ever hear her name.
Let's call her Sneezy.
Yes. It's
because she goes into these uncontrollable sneezing.
What the hell?
It's hilarious. But he does love her, and he works 7 days a week to take care of this family.
Yeah, exactly. He is busting his hump, even though he knows the show's a success. It's a hit. They're making a crap load of money. This guy is still out there making his own money. June, that's her. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
You know what? I should have remembered that, because that was my ex Chris's girlfriend's name, and he cheated on me with her, some Jew broad from Long Island.
I remember that story.
You're coming from Rochdale Village Project.
And you're dating a Jew broad from...
You start cheating on your girl from Jamaica, from your same hood. You start cheating on her with some Jew broad
in
Long
Island.
You know
what part of Long Island? Like Baldwin?
And she was so stupid, she gave me her address over the phone.
What was like? Was she like from Baldwin, Long Island?
I don't know. She was from somewhere in Long Island. Come
from Glenhead or something like that. Anyway.
Yeah, well.
But yeah, the reason why I'm bringing up Honey Boo Boo, okay? Because having watched that and finally getting a real scope of what it is that's going on with that family. There's a new reality show that's coming on, and I know JC's got to. You've got to get me a Shorty Low record. I don't care if it's got language.
He sings that. It's the song that you'll know it. It's He has one huge hit out.
Okay, JC.
What's the name of that huge hit that he had out? Drop it low. I think it's not. Is it drop it low or something? It's some shit.
Well, I don't know what the name of the song is, but if we can find it, that's fine. But Shorty Low, the rapper, has a reality show that's coming out, and it's at risk right now, ladies and gentlemen. The show is at risk of never, ever coming onto the air. So far, the trailer of the reality show has been pulled, according to the UK Daily Mail. The headline reads...
Why? It wasn't a theme.
I know. They said trailer pulled for reality show starring rapper who fathered 11 children by 10 women after it's branded an attack on African American families. A 20,000 strong change.org petition claims that the Oxygen show, All My Baby's Mamas, stereotypes and demeans black children, mothers, and dads.
No, it don't. It gives people a realistic view into these assholes that have 10 babies mamas and 11 goddamn kids.
Yeah, exactly.
With all these, and he ain't even cute.
Yeah, well, apparently.
He ain't even tall. The dude is short.
Yeah,
some of his baby's mamas are taller than he is.
What I find incredible is that apparently the current baby mama, the current woman he's with.
No, the current girlfriend. They don't have any
children. She doesn't have any children either. They don't have any
children.
And
she's 19.
Okay, yeah, she's 19 years old. And apparently, I think that there's a year difference between he and his oldest child, sir,
and
the
oldest
child.
Yes, that's correct.
Right. Now, I don't. It's called All My Baby's Mamas. It's set to air this spring on the Oxygen Network. And it's supposed to follow Carlos Shorty Low Walker, who's 36 years old, as he navigates family life in an affluent suburb in Atlanta, Georgia. But after a preview of the one-hour Fly on the Wall hit, the internet, thousands of viewers called for it to be scrapped, with many suggesting it plays to racial stereotypes.
So the hell is Honey Boo Boo, bitches? Get over it.
But it's okay to mock white families. Slope-headed country folk is funny.
Because nobody wants to deal with the true, how true this shit is. And I'm not talking about all black families because they're not like this. I'm not saying all black families are this way. But this, why? Because it's not the truth. The truth.
Well, this is a microcosm of African-American families. And I say microcosm because it should be considered that, a microcosm. Not all black families are like that, but you know how people get. They hear something like this, and they see something like this, and they immediately start deeming it, oh, it's racist, we can't show black families like this, this is airing of dirty laundry.
No, bitch, is this reality.
This is, okay, Shorty Low, they know, I guess it's
called No, JC, there's another track that he made that was a much bigger hit than that.
Yeah,
and I can't remember what it was because I was like, oh, he made that? I didn't know he made that.
I thought this was his biggest to date. I think that's one that's currently on the charts as well.
This is currently on the charts. Who's he signed? This says Asylum Records. I know this record label because I'm almost positive De La Soul did one of their last albums on this record label, Asylum. I'm almost positive that. In fact, The Grind Date, an album that I frequently play on my phone.
Asylum, wasn't it owned by Scarface at one point?
I don't know. I don't know. But this thing says, this song is from 2007. Mary, is that? It's about to load now. I'm going to see whether or not this is the song.
Yeah, you'll know when you hear it.
Tells you what song it was, and when I saw it.
Well, hold on. Here's the song.
What are all these people doing behind you?
Come on, baby. That's my theme music. Every good hair song, huh?
I've actually heard this track.
I've never heard that track.
I've heard. This was one of the first tracks that came out. I'm not going to lie. The track's kind of hot.
No, it's not.
That beat's kind of hot.
They all sound the same. All
of course.
Rap, it sounds the same.
Well, I've heard that song before, so I'm familiar with this kid. I thought he was a one-hit wonder. Anyway, now, JC, I don't know if you know who this woman is who started this petition, but I read something about her not too long ago. that she was the one who successfully got people to pay attention to this story. That says, okay, they said the trailer also shows him as he fails to remember the names of his 11 teenage children. In an interview with Essence magazine, Miss Lamb, that's the woman who started this petition. Let me see if I can get her full name here. Excuse me. Let me see. What is her name here?
Why isn't Miss Lamb thinking about all the money that they're going to make off of this so that these goddamn 11 kids can be taken care of?
Exactly. That's a very good point, Mary. She's a New York-based writer.
Of course she is.
Yeah, her name is Sabrina Lamb. She's launched the initiative, and she explains that this is not just an attack on African-American parents and children, but all parents and children. I don't know how that is. As dysfunctional and violent as so-called reality shows are, could you ever imagine a one-hour spectacle where 11 children are forced to witness their 10 unwed mothers clamor for financial support, emotional attention, and sexual reward from Shawty Lowe? Oxygen released a 13-minute trailer promoting the show in December before production had been completed. In the clip, which is now disappeared from YouTube, Mr. Walker is seen talking about managing his music career and his struggle of being a father from the confines of his roomy 8-bedroom mansion. How does a guy like me have 10 baby mamas and 11 kids? It's heaven, he boasts in one scene. In another, he explains, I had a lot of girls, and they was in love. I probably was, too, and it just happened. The trailer shows him as he fails to remember the names of his 11 teenage children, as I mentioned. In the interview about a petition, Ms. Lamb said, in the clip, I saw Lowe couldn't even remember the names of his 11 children. It's not funny to me. What's funny about this?
Now, that's none of your goddamn business, bitch.
As far as I'm concerned, I want it on the air. It's got to be on the air, regardless of that. Because, you can't have your honey boo-boos. You cannot have, look at the success of Buck Wild, the new show on MTV. You know, I watched an episode of that today. I was bored to tears. It's boring. These kids are not, with the exception of one kid who's just a straight up clown. He will be the Snooki of this show. This kid is just a dude. He's a pickup truck driving maniac. He blows stuff up. He just runs around jumping off roofs. He's all backward all the time. That's all he is. All he cares about is drinking beer, smoking weed. Like, what's that line in Don't Be a Menace to South Central while drinking your juice in the hood? So let's see here. Your hobbies are smoking weed, drinking, and a whole lot. I forget the line. I got to get it. It's one of my favorite lines. But this show is boring. A bunch of girls being catty to one another. Another girl in another girl's business because she likes some boy. They want her to admit it. She's having sex in her friend's bed. The friend doesn't like it. She's upset. It literally was the most boring thing in the world. I want to see Shawty Lowe. And if Flavor of Love can have, what, 3 seasons? What did they have? 3 seasons, didn't it? Well, it spawned a show from New York, that girl in New York, she got her own what? Spawned, she had 3 shows.
Yep. It spawned Hard Knock School or something for all the girls that were on the show.
Oh, really?
No, it started out on A Surreal Life. It started out with Flavor and Brigitte Nielsen on Surreal Life.
Right, right. Well, yeah.
Then they got their own show.
You know about what I'm saying? The Brigitte Nielsen thing with Flavor Flav, that had nothing about You know, I mean, it wasn't about, like, black dating or, you know what I'm saying, like, or black life or anything like that. But
yeah,
but
they got their own show together.
Yeah, exactly. But if you could talk about, if you could have the Flavor of Love's spawn, and then from that have the New York spawn, and Mary, I think the show you were talking about was called Charm School?
Yeah.
That's it, yeah. And it spawns Charm School and all of that other. Several seasons of Charm School. Right.
And that's on Rock of Love.
Right. Well, see, Rock of Love is a different thing because it's okay if white people act silly. You know, that's the reason why The Bachelorette and The Bachelor stuff is so successful, because we can watch white girls get catty with one another. You know, it that stuff is okay, but once you start showing the underbelly of black life, racism is screamed. And I want to see this. I don't want it to stop. It's all turnabout is fair play. Now, JC, two things I need you to do. One.
How come nobody's complaining about Gateway Funeral?
Oh, no. I'm going to get into... Wait, Mary. That we have to get into next.
That involves in the black thing.
That is the most hilarious. We got to get into that when we get back. Trust me, I'm staying on topic on that one because I have to bring that up. Okay? I'll take your calls in the next hour. If you want to call, the number's 347-308-8701. We will get into that when we return. It's called Best Funeral Ever. And from what I heard, it was delayed after the Newtown shooting. This was supposed to air in December. But the Newtown shooting that happened on December 14th in Connecticut delayed the release of this TV show called The Best Funeral Ever, which is, in essence, my Super Sweet 16 of death. This is exactly what it is. So I want to talk about that when we get back. I don't have any audio for you, but I'm going to have some audio about this because I'm going to get some audio on this show because I have to. We'll talk about it. If you haven't heard of it, please check it out. See if you can. I will talk about the episode that we watched yesterday and what these people. Mary and I were up at the wee hours of the night eating McDonald's in bed watching this tragedy as it happened. It is probably the sickest thing I've ever seen on television.
Before we go to break, I want everybody to go to my Facebook page. All of our regular listeners know what the Facebook page is. And if you don't, you can go to Reese on the Radio and just click on. It shows that he's married to Mary Hopkins. Just click on that. You can go to my page. I posted a really great opportunity for five lucky people. One person has already taken a spot, so there's four spots left.
Oh, really? Okay.
Go to my page. You'll see it. It's called Pay It Forward. You'll see it on my page. If you leave a comment and then you repost what I posted, we're going to start a whole chain.
Oh, okay. All right, we'll be back. Stick around. Here's Atlas Genius with Trojans. We'll be back to talk about Best Funeral Ever when we return right here on Reese on the Radio.
Take it all, take it in, take up all the thoughts of what we've been. Take a look, hesitate, take a picture you could never recreate. Write a song.
Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Wow, we're in stereo.
That's Big Boy from the infamous Outkast. He's got a new album out that's actually Apple of My Eye. I really, really like that song. That's pretty good. It's different. Well, actually, no, it's not. Sounds just like old typical Outkast. Anyway, check that out. I think the album came out sometime last month. Okay, here's the trailer if you're just joining us. Best Funeral Ever is what I'd like to call my super sweet 16 of death. I don't know what this trailer has, but just listen for yourself.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
My name is John Beckwith, Jr. I am the Chief Executive Officer of Golden Gate Funeral Home.
And y'all know this is going to be an extremely busy week.
The Golden Gate Experience is our version of the traditional African-American homegoing celebration. We do not have generic beers. Everybody's experience has to be different.
A homegoing is much different than a friend. Homegoing is a celebration.
Anywhere the disco dancing machine can do how to do the Watsusi.
We could have your celebration.
If they want to dunk a basketball, Golden Gate Funeral Home can make that happen for them. If they want to jump out of airplanes, Golden Gate Funeral Home can make that happen for them. Our services are over the top. That's why I have to have 110% commitment from my funeral planners. Anything less than that, and I'm showing you the door. If we continue to work together like I know we can, we're going to make these families extremely happy at the worst moments of their lives.
Okay. That's pretty much the premise. Now, look, folks, I'm not one for funerals. I'm sure I'm going to be made to go to some. I may be made to go. If I have my way, I will never, ever go. But let me just say, the Pentecostal church has got nothing on this Golden Gate funeral home. The episode that we watched last night, folks, let me just put it to you this way. Apparently the guy who sang the original song
for
Chili's Baby Back Ribs, I want my baby back ribs. Apparently this man passed away. So his family went to the Golden Gate Funeral Home, and they wanted to have his homegoing celebration, which is what they call Whitney Houston's funeral. I'm sure many of you will remember in Newark this past year. Now, that to me appeared to be a traditional funeral. People came up, they told stories, they gave eulogies. B.B. Winans gave probably one of, I thought was probably one of the most memorable eulogies during Whitney Houston's funeral, or homegoing as they called it, when he talked.
Homecoming.
That was called homecoming. He gave one of the most memorable eulogies there. I thought not only was he insightful into his personal relationship with Whitney, but he was also humorous and funny, and he talked about it, and he made, you know, people laugh, and that's what you want to remember, you know. I don't know if you've ever been to an Irish wake. Those are... Yeah, those are hilarious, folks. Okay? They are some of the most hilarious freaking things I've ever seen in my entire life. But this thing, for the guy who sang the Chili's Baby Back Ribs, they brought in, you know, one of those chocolate fountains. And they filled it with barbecue sauce. And people paraded up and down past the pews.
Don't forget about
Sticky. Yeah, I was getting there. They were walking down up and down the pews with big giant ribs, like from the Flintstones, like the, you know, the one that Fred Flintstone puts at, you know, they put at the top of his car, but they weren't real, but they were big giant rib replicas. And then when people were able to go up to the casket, people
which
would,
which was a fire pit, was
that's right,
a black fire pit.
That's right, a big black fire pit, right? You know, the like the big giant what do you call it? What do you call those cans? Looks like a big giant a metal barrel. You know, that you lift up in the top. It's round. It's cylindrical, and you open it up from the side, and you put the... That's what it looked like. It looked like a big, giant barbecue pit grill. They had his body in that. And people walked up, and they were dipping a rib into the fountain of barbecue sauce and taking bites. They were having a ceremony here. And then they had pigs running through the pews up...
It wasn't even a pew. It was a...
Where was it? It was in some hall, right?
It was in a barn.
Yeah, exactly. You can pretty much call it a barn.
It was a barn.
And there are people sitting around eating barbecue ribs, walking back and forth with rib replicas.
Screaming, praise Jesus. I want my baby back, baby back.
They
baby
were
back
singing the pastor.
The pastor sang it.
The pastor had on a cooking hat, the big giant chef's hat.
Sweating all over.
Talking about, I want my baby back, baby back, baby back. Now, to make things worse, because this doesn't dominate the whole half an hour, they have about two different shows that they put together. And you can't call them anything but shows. These are not funerals, folks. These are shows. These are pageants. They're pageants. The one that kicked my ass. Now, these are black. These are black going home celebrations, if you will. They had one, apparently a family member who had passed, loved Christmas. His birthday was just days before Christmas, and he loved Christmas. What is it? Yeah, I think he's like the 12th. Yeah, something like that.
And he was young.
And yeah, young guy.
He was
40-something.
2 years older than me. He was 40.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, he's 40 years old. Died early. Loved Christmas. So
I wonder how he died. I wonder if he died. I don't know.
They don't tell. But, they had a Christmas thing going on there, but the thing that was freaking me out, the whole thing, folks, and I hope that you can see this, was that when they had, like, the angels and the manger and Christmas tree, the big giant Christmas tree in there.
17 different animals.
17 different animals, as Mary just mentioned.
A nativity scene,
yes, I mentioned
they
that.
Elves.
They had, yes. The what are they called? The pallbearers were dressed in green leotards. In tights.
They had a big cookie guy.
They had a guy dressed up as a big giant
gingerbread
cookie. They had Frosty the Snowman. But the one person who they had sitting up in the at the altar
was the big giant gingerbread cookie.
No. You didn't see this guy? They had Santa. And folks, when I tell you, this man I know was saying the entire time, what the F am I doing here? Because what was he? They didn't have a black Santa, which baffled the crap out of me. This is a black funeral, black going home. What's the deal? Where's the black Santa? No, they had a white man with a beard, a little scruffy beard. White Santa sitting up on the altar. And the look on his face.
Even them black people know that Santa's white.
But what was he doing
there? Jesus may not be white, but Santa is. It had been a problem if they had somebody dressed up as Jesus.
But you had to see the look on Santa's face. Santa's sitting up there going, what have I been dragged into? What am I doing here?
I'll never listen to these Negroes again.
I know. Look.
No, wait. Did you talk about the faux...
What was
the faux mourners?
Oh, yeah. Oh, thank you, Mary. Thank you. This is what I did not know. Now, folks, there's an acting gig out there for you struggling in the medium. They have professional mourners that they interview at their church or their funeral home or whatever, and people come in and they act like they're mourning. They're complete strangers. And what they're there to do
is to set it off.
Yeah, to set it off. They're there. They got people who stomp their feet. They got people who shake. People who cry and drape themselves all over the casket. You had to see these people auditioning.
And they promoted the auditioning on TV. They didn't try to go around it at all. They were seriously, homeboy said, there's a need for professional mourners.
Yes.
And one of the guys they had up, or one of the ladies they had up there just didn't make the cut. He told her ass to go back and sit in the pew.
This is a racket. But what it doesn't, nothing is off limits. Now, the thing that scares me is that the people who are going there to pay for the services of the Golden Gate funeral home, I didn't want to see these people contributing a great deal as to what it is that they wanted to do. We didn't get to see the third installment of this because I think there were three. You saw the third one?
Where they went to the fair?
Yes.
Oh,
please tell me. What?
Okay, the man was 60 years old. He had passed away. He was born with spina bifida.
Confined
to some type of assistance to be mobile, whether it was a cane, crutches, you know, then it went to a wheelchair. He was only supposed to live for a certain amount of years, but he, you know, surpassed his lifespan, according to the doctors, you know, by many, many years. So his sister wanted to take him to the fair. They already cremated him and put him in this huge-ass extravagant urn.
That I wanted to know. So they put him in a big, giant urn. How tall was the urn?
The urn had to come up to my hip.
Oh, okay. We're talking about a good 2-3 feet.
Yeah.
Goodness gracious. Okay.
So they went to the state. The funeral home people went to the state fair. They were calling them. The people at the state fair hung up on them.
Really?
Because they thought it was a joke. And the lady was like, no, I'm not joking. I'm serious. And she'd be like, hello? 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 Nope. Them jokers said, click up. So they went down, talked to some big-ass white man at the state fair, told him what they wanted to do. He finally agreed to do it because they said, oh, it's going to be great marketing for you. Well, needless to say, the other people at the fair were looking around at these people like, what in the hell? The white folks. They did it during normal operating hours, and they carried the urn in like they would be carrying Cleopatra in. On this, like, I don't, what is it called?
It's like a chariot, if you
will. Yeah, they were carried him in on a chariot. The preacher said what he had to say in front of everybody. Even the standbyers.
Right.
The standbyers are looking around with their kids like, what the hell is going on? The state fair is supposed to be fun, not morbid. And in a way, you know, it was fun for the family.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, these kids don't know what the hell is going on.
Right.
And so they proceed to get on rides, the bumper cars.
They put them on the bumper cars?
The Ferris wheel. The Music Express.
Oh, they did those little...
Oh, they was bumping and grinding.
Yeah, now, see, the Music Express thing for a lot of people, because everybody calls it the Music Express, but
that's what it's called in Coney Island. That's what
I always thought it was called the Himalaya.
No, it's called the Music Express.
Well, people... I know a lot of people I know are familiar with it.
It's the Himalaya.
Forwards
and backwards.
Backwards, right?
I'll never forget.
Around.
The last time I ever rode on one was in Coney Island.
Well, I know the one in Coney Island is called the Music Express.
And there was a girl in front of us...
Huge.
...that bucket. Had weave on, and they were playing, is it him or her? And we went a little too fast going forward.
Was it
and
him or
the
me?
Weave, yeah, is it him or me? And the weave came out, and we started singing, is it hair or weave? Hair or weave?
For those of you who don't know the song, Him or Me is a song by Today from back in the
80s. Well, that shit was hilarious.
So they just took him on every ride, and that was it. It was over.
They took him on every ride, and that was it. It was over. But they had, like... They had a kid with, like, a backpack on.
Uh-huh.
But the backpack was kind of, like, in front.
Okay.
And I guess...
Looks like a child carrier almost.
But it was an urn carrier. Like, they made sure that... Because in the bumper cars, when they got in the bumper cars, in the commercial, they show that the urn, like, goes forward because he hits somebody.
Right, it looks like it's going to tip
and
over.
It looks like it's going to tip over. But it's in, but this, the one guy's real big and you can't see the little kid sitting next to him. It's the owner of the humor home or whatever.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But the kid is sitting next to him with this contraption on, holding the top one and everything. It was like a car seat. a mobile car seat.
Yeah.
It was hilarious. The last ride they took him on was the Ferris wheel.
Okay.
And the preacher couldn't handle that. The preacher had to get off. He said, no, I can't do it.
Oh, you mean the big giant, like...
The Ferris wheel.
Yeah,
the
big
the
giant.
The thing that goes around. But it wasn't giant. It was tiny.
Oh, was it?
It's a fair.
Well,
it wasn't great adventures.
I don't like heights either.
Yeah, but it wasn't great adventures.
Well, I'm just saying. It's you know, I wouldn't go up on that thing either.
You pussy.
Whatever.
I'm getting on no roller coaster.
Well, yeah, so it says you.
But I'll get on the pair.
Yeah, but it's look, if you have to see it just for the spectacle. Now, again, that's another thing. Just to go backwards to this whole deal with with Shorty Lowe, all my baby mamas. If we can have the best funeral ever on TLC, and we could have Flavor of Love, and we could have New York Goes to Hollywood. What was her shows called? She had a whole bunch of ridiculous show. But
New York, the ghetto
if they could have those, then Shorty Lowe's got to have his show. All right? Everybody's got to be equal opportunity humiliation. I want to see that. Now, JC, I said before I wanted you to do two things. What? JC, you there? Please tell me you're still there. Unless I bored you to death. He said he's napping it up already.
It's 8:53.
It's 8:53. JC's already on his second nap. JC, you there?
No.
Of course not.
He's there, but he's sleeping. JC,
right.
You really got to get that sleep apnea under control.
Yeah, man, it's really, really bad. But you know what? Look, we'll take a break. When we come back, I've got to talk about this mother who got 17 years. I think she got another 4 years put on her sentence for killing her child. She only got 17 years. She should have gotten more. But her trial, I believe, just ended, if not today, but maybe yesterday.
That's a far cry from what that bitch got for killing a daughter in Florida.
What, Casey Anthony?
Yeah.
Well, she got nothing.
Exactly.
But when you hear the story, you're going to be a little flipped out for what it is. And this is, again, I find it stunning that no one's having this conversation after the Newtown shooting.
I want to know why we haven't talked about the chicks doping their parents.
We will get into that story. We're going to talk about it last week, but we will get into that today. I think I talked about that. No, maybe I did. But anyway, we'll talk about that. This mother is going to do 17 years. She might do 21 in all. She killed her 7-year-old son. And when you find out why, I promise you, you're going to be a little bit stunned because it's frightening. To hear that somebody would actually do something like this. And then the fact that she tried to pin it on her husband was even more frightening. You just can't trust anybody anymore. We'll be back. Stick around.
This Save Us Chuck Minute is brought to you by Common Sense Everywhere, except in Washington. My fellow Americans, I was absolutely shocked at the revelation that Jesse Jackson Jr. is accused of spending campaign finances like a recent lotto winner. But what really shocked me was in the midst of this scandal, the people of Chicago reelected him, only for him to resign a week later, costing the state a fortune in special election costs. Jackson will soon be joining the prestigious list of Chicago luminaries like Dan Rostenkowski and Rod Blagojevich. And since no one is responsible for their own actions, not even voters, I would like to propose that Chicago open up a felonious politician museum. This way they can pick up some lost revenue that's been pilfered from the people. And make sure to leave room for expansion for more Chicago heroes like Axelrod, Emanuel, and Obama. I'm Chuck Woolery. And I think I just said that with my outside voice. Like us on Facebook at the Save Us Chuck Woolery page and follow us on Twitter at Save Us Chuck.
Warning, the sound you're about to hear can be devastating to your ear.
I love it, I love it, I love it, I L-O-V-E-I-T.
You're listening to Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com.
My fellow Americans, I've always wanted to see that. But seriously, this conference brought to you by the letters S. And M. Now, Elmo here to announce his official retirement from Sesame Street. There are many different reasons for this, but mainly just because Elmo wants to spend more time playing golf, doing Sudoku, and just having a good time. Maybe even branch out and have a movie career. Okay, Elmo, open up the floor to questions now.
Right here, Elmo. Right here. To the left. Back left, Elmo. Thank you, Elmo. Pleasure to be here. Now, what are your feelings on the scandal?
Oh, no, it's okay. Elmo answers. Elmo loves scandals. They come in all sorts of pretty colors, like red, purple, yellow. Then when you light them, they smell so good, like vanilla, cinnamon, lavender. Oh, they're so nice.
I think you thought I said candles.
Yeah, Elmo, no. That's what Elmo's talking about. Next question.
Reese on the Radio, and we are back. We are live on this January the 7th, 2013. I almost said September. I have no idea why. Why would I be thinking September? You wish it was September already? Well, this is true. Winter weather is not Mary's favorite, as I'm sure it is with many others. But there are a lot of people who love the weather. I just can't get it. I don't even like the summer, and I'm a summer child. Anyway, an interesting story that came out of England, in fact, according to this story, it was actually just published by the Associated Press today. According to the story, a British judge has sentenced a woman he called a devoted and loving mother to at least 17 years of prison for beating her son to death after he failed to memorize passages from the Quran. A jury at Cardiff Crown Court in Wales convicted 33-year-old Sarah Eid last month of murdering 7-year-old Yassin and burning his body to destroy the evidence. Judge Wynne Williams said Eid beat Yassin repeatedly. He even said that she beat him repeatedly but still used the words devoted and loving. Okay. Beat Yassin repeatedly with a stick over several months, causing internal injuries. He said that on the day he died in 2010, Yassin had been kept home from school to memorize verses from the Muslim holy book, and that his failure was the trigger for the beating that killed him. The judge agreed with defense's arguments about the Indian-born Eid's state of mind, saying she was a devoted and loving mother who suffered from depression and had been a victim of domestic violence. Still, he said, she subjected her son to prolonged cruelty. The Eid admitted killing her son in a confession taped by police, but later retracted it and blamed it on her husband, Youssef. He was tried and acquitted on the charge of failing to prevent his son's death. Eid sobbed as the judge passed sentence. Williams
said the 2.5 years she spent in a secure psychiatric unit since her arrest would count toward her 17-year minimum sentence. Now, the part that I find extremely baffling about this, folks, is here is a woman beating a male child over the Quran. Forget about what it is that you've heard your entire life about the cruelties of people of the Islamic faith in their Islamic countries. You know, stoning women for being with men.
Stoning women for being raped that don't have male witnesses.
That's right. Stoning women for being raped who don't have male witnesses.
Removing their clitorises.
This is also true. Yeah.
Showing them up so that they're like...
Oh, just the even sound of that is just disgusting to me. But here it is, where a woman is beating a male child because he does not remember passages in their Quran. And yet, very minimum coverage. Now, I don't know whether or not you folks remember. In fact, you probably heard this recently, that Vladimir Putin, president of Russia, has signed a bill preventing children who were adopted by American families to leave Russia and come to the United States. Now, some of this was based upon a case where a woman who had a Russian child, about 7 years old, the Russian child was inside the house beating, biting, scratching, and attacking her children who were already in the home. So she packed the kid up, put him on a plane, and sent him back to Russia. Now, many people ostracized this woman for doing that. Yet, no one even bothered to care that here was a woman who said that other children were in danger and didn't like the way that she handled it. She didn't leave him on some park bench. She didn't drop him off at... Pardon? And she didn't beat him to death. She put him on a plane and sent him back from which he came. I don't want him. You can have him. The kid's biting and beating my kids. tell.
And she probably didn't ask for a refund either.
And probably, exactly. That's the interesting part, because I'm sure that adoption cost her a crap load of money. I think adoption's in this. And somebody please alert me if they know. Because I know that I think that the number for the amount of money for a Chinese baby is upwards of $10,000. It's in the tens of thousands, right? Okay, well, Angelina Jolie has got that in her hip pocket. Now, she can pick up a kid from Malawi whenever time. Probably did. Probably did that for nothing. Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt probably went to one of those countries and said, look, I got a gallon of water. You ever seen this before around here? No. Give me un fufu. Hurry up. I'll take Ndugu too. Get him in there. Two bottles. It's 2 gallons of water. That's Deer Park. I'll take that right now. Give me two of them right now. Look what I've got. I've got a jawbreaker. Who wants?
A giant one.
They probably went in there with a Super Bowl. Look how high it bounces. Yeah, Ndugu, him right there. But this woman, yeah, you're right, Mary. That's an interesting thing that you mentioned. Because it's clear that if she adopted this child, she probably spent thousands of dollars to get this child into the United States. Here's a woman who pays her own money, puts him on a plane, sends him right back to Russia. She doesn't ask these people for any money back. Not one thing. She doesn't ask for a refund to get this kid the F up out of here. Take him. He's landing in 17 hours. Grab his ass.
And you said just
take
a little motherfucker back to where you
came. Take him back from which he came. This is probably common practice in the Kremlin. Yeah, look at my kid. He's bleeding by the nose. He bit him. Get him out of here. And they ripped and ridiculed this woman for doing that, for sparing the lives of her own children.
And sparing the lives of that child.
Exactly. Imagine that kid would have done something that had got him killed. Burned down the house. Woke up in the middle of the night and she's got Adam Lanza sitting in her, in the next room. You know what I mean? I'm not one to suggest that that's the case here, but somebody that young, I think the kid was no more than 7 years old.
For her to have spent all that money and spent all that time, that kid had, there had to be something wrong with that kid.
Of course. Of course. I mean, to be ridiculed and berated by the New York press, she was ripped apart by national media, saying, how could she have done this? This was wrong. What a cruel way to treat the child. Look, I understand that.
How come nobody was doing a story on her when she brought the child here from fucking
Russia? They could care less about that, because that's what it is that people are supposed to do. But see, once you do something where you're protecting, and it doesn't appear that anybody in the media, not like they're the end-all, be-all of moral standing, I guess, for lack of a better term, but for the fact that they would rake this woman all over the coals because she was protecting the children in her household, and she released a statement and said, look, my kids were in danger from this child. They didn't care. You need to get that kid some help. I did. I went and got the kid help from someplace he knows. Russia. I'm pretty sure, what is it? Does Russia not have a mental health facility? Do they not have crazies there? Kid. The kid was a little off, apparently. He had violent tendencies that would have hurt people. And what would they have said? Exactly. What would they have said had a Lanza-like situation had happened? You know, there's a great story.
Why didn't you send his ass back to Russia?
A great story that happened in Staten Island a couple of years ago. And I'm sure that people remember this. The little boy who was accused of killing his sisters and his mother in Staten Island and setting the house on fire. And the mother drafted a suicide note to make it look like the oldest boy killed everybody and set the house on fire. And it turned out it was the mother. And she tried to friend. And the kid, he wasn't autistic. He wasn't even off. He was kind of shy. They said he was a little strange. But every one of the neighbors, after it happened, everybody said, they found this suicide letter, this partially burned suicide letter. And they couldn't believe it. They were all blaming this kid. They said this kid woke up one day and was just off. He was always off. He was a little to himself, a little weird. Set the house on fire. They found the bodies. The bodies of the girls, the throats were slashed, and the mother had been stabbed in the chest. And then people started, immediately just releasing the story that this boy had done it. Then, after further investigation, it turned out that it wasn't the boy's handwriting, that it was indeed the mother's. Then neighbors started coming out and saying, we knew something was wrong with this story in the first place because we've got pictures of the little boy with his sisters. And they started showing the pictures to the media. And the boy is hugging his sisters. And the white woman, the white neighbor who knew the boy the most, she let him do odd jobs around her house. She said that little boy was protective of his sisters. He was always hugging them. He was always playing with them. He was always around them. When they got into trouble, he would always try to get them out of trouble. If they were running through the streets or doing something dangerous, he was always there to protect them. But nobody wanted to believe that. So here's this woman who's got a little Adam Lanza on her hands. And she says, to save everybody's life, I'm getting this son of a bitch out of my house. It's frightening, folks. I think for me, it's scary as all hell.
Sal said, no, they work at the Russian carnivals. Sal, who works at the Russian carnivals? The psycho, the psychotic kids. They don't put them in mental health facilities. They all put them in the Russian circus. Do they end up? That's interesting. I wonder if those people end up at Cirque du Soleil. Those people always look weird to me. I don't care who they are. I don't care how talented they are, flipping each other on their feet and butt. Yeah, they're circus freaks. What's the term? Carnies? Oh, these are people that should be committed. They all work at the carnivals in Russia. They probably do. That in and of itself is scary as hell. I don't understand why people grab these kids from over there. The culture is different. If they're babies,
so
maybe.
Many children in this country that need to be adopted and that need help. Stop fucking going over there and adopting people that you don't know what they've been subject to.
Well, you know, that's interesting because it's common to adopt babies in China. That's a common thing. It's very rare.
They get more kickback from the United States government for adopting an international child than they do for adopting a child right here.
Okay, fair enough. But you still,
about money.
Well, I know it's about money. It's also about prestige. There's a degree of that. There's a degree of prestige, and what I also find very alarming about this is...
So it's more prestigious for your American ass to go...
Of course it is.
China
...and
get a kid from
China... Honey, that, you know...
There.
Look, the bottom line is, you know, that these kids... Look at Murdoch, Angelina Jolie. I think that was the first kid that they adopted, right? The little... where is he from? Mongolia? I know he's something Asian. But Murdoch, I think, is his name. I apologize, not Murdoch, Maddox. The kid that they adopted. He was the first one they adopted. That's to them, I mean, I hate to say this, and it sounds cruel, but, you know, we all know it in our hearts, and I'll be one of the first to say it out loud. These kids are nothing more than a designer handbag.
It's to them, yes.
You know?
Adopting all of those foreign kids on how many Madonna
just started
adopting kids, it became a fad.
Exactly.
Like, oh, you got on Manolo boots?
Yeah.
I need a pair of those, girl. Where'd you get that from? Cambodia?
Right. But Madonna with a little Malawi kid. You know, it's like that's the new handbag. I got me a Malawi, I got a Mongolian. That's just cruel. Housework will never be the same. 347-308-8701. Let's go to Sally D. What's up, Sal?
Boom, boom, boom.
Boom, boom, boom. Sally D is in the room. Hello, Sal.
In the room, and I have no idea where you're going with this, but one of the things I wanted to just, you know, you talked about this woman and the kid, and these kind of stories just... Yeah, I get enraged when I hear it, but at the end of the day, you know, we don't put regulations on who can have kids, and you know, we only react after the kid's abused, and usually only after it's too late, and they've already suffered, like, you know, countless times, but, you know, you hear this kind of thing, and it's just, you get angry, but more and more of this is going to happen when you have a society that's as fractured as our society is. And,
but,
you know, then you compound
Sal,
that abuse, which leads to these kids who need the medication. And it's just like a vicious cycle. And then they turn into the kids that pull the guns in the malls. I mean,
right.
This is just a snapshot of where we're going.
Well, what do you think? What do you think that this kid, this woman, Eeg, with her son beating him because he can't remember the Quran? This is how you get... And Abdullah Muttalib, this is how you get a Faisal Shahzad, you know, the underwear bomber on Christmas and the Times Square bomber in Manhattan.
Yeah, I mean,
respectively.
Whether it's the Quran or it's the father beating his son because he struck out a couple times in a baseball game. You know, the kids, it's that kind of thing doesn't go away. They carry it with them the rest of their lives. And the majority of the time, these kids are either turn out to be criminals or they end up being, they're not able to succeed in life because they can't get beyond the doubt. It's tragic. It's tragic. I mean, my son, you know, I try to temper my exuberance because you don't want to make them think that anything they do is special, but I tend to lean that way, and I'm hoping that by showing him that kind of care, I also show a side of achievement and try to get him to achieve things or finish things. But, you know, I don't even know how it's possible to bring a life into this world and then to do these kind of things, and these people just shouldn't be walking. But unfortunately, you know, that happens quite a bit, and I don't know what you can do about it.
Yeah,
you
but
take
what about
the kids away, where do they go? They go into an orphanage or some kind of program, you know, and what's out there these days for these kind of kids? I honestly know.
Well, don't put them in an orphanage, and definitely don't put them, don't put them in these group homes. Those are some of the worst places for these kids. But see, here's the part that I find startling about this whole Eeg story, this British woman. You know, here it is, she's beating this kid because he won't recite the Quran correctly. He's not remembering. He's 7 years old, for crying out loud. The kid lives in England. It's a westernized civilization. He's forced to stay home to remember these passages in the Quran. Now, the reason why people aren't talking about this, because this is, I don't care where you are or where you're from, this is a story and this is a tragedy, and it should be discussed. But I'll tell you why we won't discuss it, because the issue of the Quran plays a part. And no one wants to talk about the radicalism, because that's what this was. This was radicalism based upon religion. And here was a woman at the forefront.
The most oppressed.
Yeah, the one who's considered the most oppressed within that culture, being a part of suborning this kind of cruelty and this punishment on a 7-year-old boy for the sake of the Quran. And what mothers, in order for them to be outraged, they're going to say, like, why does she beat the kid? They're like, oh, because he wouldn't learn the Quran. Then you see people back away. It's like, oh, I don't know to talk about that. That's their culture. That's their culture. Yeah. And you back away. It's like, of course you're still going to be outraged. But I think people are fearful of ripping this woman apart behind the Quran. You can, if you had found out that this woman beat her child because he wouldn't remember because he wouldn't remember passages in the Bible, that people would be outraged at religion and Catholicism.
I agree, Reese, but I'm not defending it, but I am going to say one thing. I think I told you a while back I got to meet Robert Spencer, and he's an expert on Islamic jihadism. Are you familiar with him?
Not particularly.
So, you know, basically he's been talking about Muslim Brotherhood for a long time. He's had threats in his life regularly. They want him. And I asked him, what's it like to live knowing that they've got these, what are they called, fatwas?
Yeah, fatwa.
He's got, they're out there on him. And he lives with this. Now, let's say you've got a neighbor, and you see this neighbor, and he looks a little shady, and he's Middle Eastern. And I had a situation like this happen not long ago. And this guy, I watched him for a while. He was definitely up to something. But then the problem is, you bring up a subject like this, and if you're wrong, you're going to get called out. And not only that, you could bring attention to yourself that you just don't want in your neighborhood, depending on the mix of people.
Wow.
Now, did people see this happening, these beatings? Probably not. Were there probably signs in public this kid just wasn't acting appropriately? Well, how do you judge that with a culture that so keeps itself so close to the vest from Western people? So this is how these things kind of happen. But at the end of the day, you know, you're always going to wonder who you're when it comes to this kind of thing. If she's radicalized, chances are she's got ties with radical people. How many people are going to go out on a limb?
Yeah, but even if you don't go out on, you know, fine if you want to go out on a limb. If that's the root cause of not getting involved in a story like this is out of fear of retribution, then it's clear that they've won.
We can
I remember. Are you talking about like the Muslim stuff?
Sure.
I remember reading the Reader's Digest. You know, like probably 2000, 2001, 2002. I mean, it was everywhere. There was like the cruelty to women by Muslims in Muslim countries is outrageous. It was outrageous then. It's still outrageous now. But it seems people only go after news stories when it's good for them. Nobody really cares. I mean, because that whole thing died down. I mean, they were, you know, women, American women fighting for the rights of Muslim women. And that didn't work out too well. You know? And it stayed for a few years. And it's kind of here and there now. But for the most part, it was just like a fad. It was just like Angelina Jolie, you know, adopting a kid from Cambodia and then Madonna going and doing the same thing or from somewhere else. I think it's because people are, you know, it's fear of retribution. I think that people are just, you know, they're lazy, and they only want to talk about what, you know, what piques their interest. Not what's about the greater good for the country or any other country.
Yeah, but the bottom line is that, you know, if this is a story, you know, if this is a story, you do a story. Forget about all of that other stuff. You know, that's the job of the media. But, of course, you know, it's just not the case anymore.
Yeah, but is it really a story? It's normal.
Of course it's a story.
It's normal for Muslim people to do these kinds of crazy, outlandish things.
Right. You know, Reese, this comes to, I don't know the specific story you're speaking of, so I don't have all the details of it, but I want to ask you, because you've brought this up a million times, or I've heard people on your station bring it. I can't think of who said this in the past, but it's been said, when a black child gets killed, the media doesn't cover it. Do you think it's a case where that's been coming into play here, where it's not, you know, this rich white kid, and so it's just not attractive to the media?
Yeah, that is a bottom line, because, you know, if I were to use the term "if it bleeds, it leads," which is a, you know, a constant meme in our society as far as television news is concerned, that will always be the case. If it bleeds, it leads. That's it. In this particular case, media is looking at this from who watches television the most, and the interest of black Americans, as far as news is concerned, is they watch the news for, and I'm going to use my sister as a perfect example here. My sister's interested in finding out the news and, finding out the weather and traffic, and then she'll occasionally get into some stories that involve news and culture. My sister recently, over the past maybe year and a half, started watching Fox News regularly. But before, she was just a very, very quick soundbite sort of person. Who got killed? Who got raped? Who got stabbed? Who got shot? And those stories are, to her, just filler for the day. Something to have a conversation with somebody about at the water cooler for 5 or 10 minutes. But people who get involved in quote-unquote stories, a missing girl, a dead child killed on Christmas Eve who used to be in children's pageants, JonBenet Ramsey, those stories appeal to the average white viewer. And with 211 million white people in the country, they're going to cover stories that appeal to that larger audience, the demographic that not only watches news but spends money.
You're spot on. There was a case here in Boston recently, and it was very upsetting to me personally. There was a triple homicide, and the family was involved in selling drugs or something, involved in the drug scene, but there was a 2-year-old boy that was there, and this animal came in, and he killed everybody, including the 2-year-old. One person lived through the shooting, and that ended up being the guy that ID'd this guy, but it took 3 years because he went through all sorts of rehab, this and that. So the media would cover the story, but they covered it from the angle of, you know, this gun-blazing shootout where all these people were killed. But the whole point of that two-year-old kid who had no choice, you know, being in that position, whose life was snuffed out, it just didn't, and it didn't seem to me like there was a lot of outcry. And honestly, I think, like you said, if it had been a JonBenet, if it had been the Madam Walsh, it's a different story. And it just speaks to...
into consideration this. Taking a huge consideration this, and I want to go to Edward in Connecticut because he's on the line as well. Take this into consideration. Jennifer Hudson, singer, actress.
Yep.
Her sister, her mother, and her sister's son, I believe, was killed in Chicago a couple of years ago. The young man who is responsible, her sister's boyfriend, has just been convicted. You know, he's off to the suite by and by. Now, we don't know the names of any of her family members who died. They were, or even the killer for that matter. The only reason why that story made headlines was because Jennifer Hudson was involved and she's a star. Now, take that same breath of Susan Tate, who we all know. You remember who her boyfriend was at the time she was killed?
Do you mean Sharon Tate?
Sharon Tate. Why did I say Susan? Sorry, Sharon Tate. I apologize. Sharon Tate was killed. Do you remember who her boyfriend was?
It was an actor, wasn't it?
No.
No, I don't remember.
And why is it that most people don't remember? And do you aside from that, do you know who even killed her?
Well, it was Squeaky Farm, right?
Yeah, but the only reason why you know that is because the story in and of itself is infamous, but who do they always talk about in that case? They talk about
Manson,
Charles Manson. He never committed the murder, but it's Charles Manson's story. So in essence, when the media chooses its direction on news, it's about what's the most sensational part of the story. And who it is that we believe will get the most attention to it. People forget how many other people died, but Sharon Tate was the most talked about person who was killed during that entire massacre. I mean, during that whole spree, that whole murder spree. Everybody talks about her. And this is something that happened back in, the 60s?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, again, this is, again, one of those classic, because if you were to look at those newspaper outfits, what it was, the editors or the managing editors of these newspapers or news corporations are talking about not the sensationalism. This is something that I learned, and I'm going to let you in on a big secret. The idea of talking about a story when it has to do with death, when it has to do with people dying, there are people romanticizing in the newsroom about why this story is relevant. Look at what we got. We've got this. We've got that. We've got this element. We've got that element. When I was going through my trial, before my first trial, well, my only trial, because before the second one was even going to start, during my first trial, we were going through pretrial hearings in March of 2011. Robert Hadelman, the bureau chief of the Child Sex Department at the New York City District Attorney's Office, pleaded with the judge, Convisser, Daniel Convisser, pleaded with the judge to allow a blogger to testify in my case, a blogger who claims that I said something on my radio show into regards to my case. And the judge ruled that the blogger wasn't going to come in because there's no evidence to prove. This person's going to come in there and just say that they heard something with nothing to corroborate. Hadelman was so furious that the judge had made his ruling, had then made an argument and got on the stand and got in the courtroom and said, Judge, I want you to consider the relevance of bringing this witness in. I want you to think about the victims in his case. They're young, they're white. His exact words. And again, that's what it is that people believe, no matter who it is that they are, especially in this business of trying to convince people. They have to look at things like color. When the color is black, these are people who would never deem themselves as being racist. But when you, this is a beautiful blonde, white. I mean, look, was Natalie Holloway all that good looking?
I mean, you know, she's dead. I'm not going to disparage her.
But I mean, come on. But I mean,
I thought she's attractive.
God rest the dead. But, you know, look, the bottom line is that why was her story relevant? And if it was that relevant, if Vandersloot's story was so relevant as a killer, why wasn't the Peruvian girl who died years later, why wasn't she just as huge of a story as Natalie Holloway?
Hey, Reese. Can I jump in real quick with the Natalie Holloway story?
Go ahead.
I don't know if you remember, but initially they thought that the perpetrators of her disappearance were black. So that does add, you know, another kind of connotation to the story.
Always. And that's interesting because if it's a black man who kills a white man, it doesn't make headlines. If it's a white man who kills a black kid, that makes headlines. But if it's, perfect example, the black woman who stabbed and killed the white woman outside of the hospital. Remember that one? In Texas? Black woman runs up on the black on the white pregnant woman, slices her stomach, and steals the baby?
Yeah, I do remember that.
Texas? That was just a couple of years ago.
Yep.
That was 2011. That story was cut and dry. Story came out, gone, over with. And it should have been a big story because it was a white woman, but can't put a black woman as some sort of quote-unquote demonized figure. Because now think about this. This is an interesting factor about all of this, guys. An interesting factor about this. The Newtown, Connecticut story has legs because of what? Is because then we can send shockwaves throughout the country to every white kid who goes to every white school across the country and say, in essence, this can happen to you. This could happen in your school. And what do the parents do? And what have the police department done in areas that have nothing to do or not even close to or in close proximity to Newtown, Connecticut? They're hiring armed guards, police officers. They've never had a threat. They've never had a scare. All of those places are now being patrolled and guarded by school kids. I mean, by police officers, right? The school kids are being protected by armed security.
Mm-hmm.
Now, imagine if you use that same story of a black woman killing a pregnant white woman, and it makes national headlines, and they're talking about it over and over and over and over again. Then the conversation becomes, watch out for black women if you're pregnant. So to avoid that, because we know when we want to exploit a crime like Newtown, we can't exploit a story where a black woman is killing a white pregnant woman. And that's the shady truth about what the media does, because they know that what they're doing is creating a narrative here. Newtown creates a narrative. Oh, gun violence. It's never a story when 503 black kids die in Chicago over gun violence. It's only a story when 20 white kids get shot in one sitting. That's a story that we can promote. That's a sensational romanticization of a story that we can spread across the globe. Now, Edward, I'm sorry. I kept you holding too long. What do you want to say, sir?
I just want to talk about the adoption thing. And, you know, shared with you guys earlier last year that my wife and I are foster parents. We were looking to adopt at one point. And just something that I want to make a, I want to point out to you guys, you know, people in this country who happen to be white often go overseas to adopt white kids, you know, from Ireland or Russia or wherever, just because there are very few white kids that come into the adoption system here in America. And when I'm talking about the adoption system, I'm talking about the state adoption. Private adoptions, right. Yeah, and they cost a hell of a lot of money. But for, you know, the state adoption system, it is very rare that these white kids come in. And some people will say, well, you know, if you want to adopt, you should just open your heart to any child and let, you know, whatever child is available for adoption come in, which some of these people are very willing to do that. But when the reality comes around, a lot of these adoptive parents have already fostered, you know, maybe black kids or Hispanic kids. And they go through a lot of crap. They go to Walmart, you know, shopping with the kids, and you got people snickering at them. Oh, you know, if they see a white woman look like a dark-skinned kid, oh, I guess she likes the dark meat, huh? You know, it's, you know, just stupid things like that. And it comes from blacks and whites attacking, you know, these people saying silly nonsense like that. And that has a big effect on these, you know, average, everyday white people who are looking to adopt a kid no matter what race. And after going through that time after time and time after again, when they're fostering kids, you know, what are you going to do? You know, you're going to look for options where you're not going to have to deal with that kind of nonsense from people.
So you believe that public scrutiny is what's really sort of the driving force about with these people who won't adopt. But now I agree with you here that it's probably very true. There must clearly be, and I see in my mind, like literally as you're speaking about this, I'm saying to myself, you know, this has got to be completely different than what it was in the 70s. In the 70s, orphanages with white children, maybe even the 50s and 60s was even with adoption agencies with white children. The number of kids then were probably huge. I mean, you could have a litany of kids that you can pick from who were white who can go into white homes. Now it's a little scarcer. It's a lot fewer people within the white community are putting their kids up for adoption. And when they do, it's usually direct sale. I hate to use that term, but you know what I mean. It's like direct to another parent.
Right, they call it private adoptions.
Right, exactly. They sit there. So now the kids who are sort of in this bucket of sort of like foster care or adoption for that matter, or more minority kids. You probably get a couple of Spanish kids, probably get a crap load of black kids. That much, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I know Bruce Willis is a huge advocate for foster care. That's probably one of the biggest things that he does in his life is try to get foster care for a lot of the kids that he mentors. And every time I see him, this guy's surrounded by young black kids. And that's...
Yeah.
That's kind of his plight. But no, I agree with you there. Maybe you're right, because that's really, really tough to argue there. Because I'm inclined to agree with you here on that level. You probably will not find a lot of white kids in the adoption agencies, and maybe there is sort of like some stigma where white people won't adopt a black child. But I would think that was okay. I mean, with movies like The Blind Side, I thought that would, you know, that would pick things up.
Well, you got to really, you know, the movies portray one thing, Reese, but I'm telling you, I've gone to, you know, I'm a foster parent. I talk with these other foster parents. The reality is when these people are walking with a black child in Walmart, there's a lot of snickers and laughter, you know, and stuff like that. So the movies can say one thing, but when these white parents go out in the public with these kids, it's a totally different, the reality is totally different. And
yeah,
that really makes a lot of
here, you guys. Go ahead, Edward. I just got a quick story on that, but go right ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say this really puts a stigma on these people, you know, where they'd rather, you know, not deal with it, you know, even though their hearts are open, want to open their homes, you know, and these type of things. I've talked to some of these, you know, white foster parents, you know, these snickers that come from people who are looking at them who are black and who are white. So it's not either, you know, no races, you know, totally, you know, you know, free of this type of, you know, of the type of things that people are saying to these white adoptive parents who are walking around with a kid who's obviously, you know, of another race or another ethnicity or something like that.
And outside of the adoption angle, you know, my wife took my son to the playground one day recently, and we live in a fairly mixed neighborhood, but I mean, I'd say it's probably 60% white and 40% other. And my son ran up to this little boy who was around his age, and I think he was Spanish, and he ran up to play, and he's like, hey, that's, you know, my son's very, very outgoing. And he went up to the boy to play, and the boy looked at him with this look on his face, and he turned to his mother and said, why is that boy so white?
Oh, my good.
Who really doesn't understand this kind of dynamic in this country fully. She just was stunned. She didn't even know how to act. So my son ran over, and he says to my wife, why am I so white? So, at the end of the day, I think the only point I'm trying to make is we are a country of racial divide. And there are plenty of people who want to make as if they are comfortable with all races and creeds. But the reality is people aren't. And I just don't see it changing. So to Edward's point, this plays in with adoptions. And you have on both sides couples making very careful consideration when adopting because they realize the scrutiny that not only they, but that the child will come under based on the area they live in.
Yeah, but with that being said, let me ask you this, because this is where I get a little confused about this, is that, I guess, you know what, because this is going to fall right back into it, and I hear myself setting myself up, is that, in essence, the bottom line is that it's probably more socially acceptable for white parents to adopt an Asian child, or I don't know, a Middle Eastern child, I don't know, any other than a black child, because there's a level of scrutiny that you're going to get for adopting a black kid. I mean, does the white family...
Why should there be any level of scrutiny for adopting...
Well, apparently, from what Edward's saying, I guess he's in the foster care world because he understands it, is that there's some sort of stigma attached to a white family having a black child.
I have a girlfriend at work that adopts, that has foster kids, and they're white. She's black.
Oh, she's black and she has white foster children?
She is black. She is black. I don't mean in color. I'm talking about black.
Does she ever talk about how, like, does she get... Does she get looks or stare? I mean, I would stare at that. If they would say ma or mom or something like that, like they treated her like a mom.
No, and she's had these kids for years.
You wouldn't look at that and go, what the hell? Like, what's going on? People do that. You wouldn't even think adoption, even though it's not far. It's not far-fetched that this woman would adopt white kids. We wouldn't even be thinking adoption if we saw it. We'd just go, did he just call her mom? Like, we would say that. And that makes people feel a little uncomfortable when you're out shopping.
And even, you know, even if you don't think adoption, people snicker. They see the black woman with the white kids. They're like, oh, that must be their nanny, you know, or something like that. You know, that happens a lot.
What if I see a Spanish or a Russian chick with a white baby?
But that's what he just said. That's exactly his point. He says if he saw your friend with those white children, the first thing he would think was, oh, this must be the nanny, or this must be the housekeeper.
I wouldn't think that, but I'm just saying that's what these people go through, listening to...
Oh, yeah, you know, they do. Hey,
when
look.
Forrest...
I don't know if I told you guys this story. I know I told it at least over a year ago. I told this story. When my son Caleb was less than 2 years old. He's light skinned. I mean, he's much paler than me, of course. And, you know, he's got curly, crinkly, sort of nappy, blonde hair. And I was walking with him one day, and this really, really good looking Spanish girl's walking behind me and following me. And I'm thinking, you know, okay. Babies are chick magnets, you know, so she's checking me out, you know, I'm with the little boy, and
Caleb turns around and looks at her and smiles and gives her a smile. He's a friendly kid. He's very outgoing. You know, and she looks at me and she goes, is this your son? I'm like, yes, this is my son, Caleb. I told Caleb, say hello. He waves and says hi. And she goes, yeah, I was just following you because I wasn't sure. I was trying to see whether or not I may have recognized your face on America's Most Wanted.
If I recognize your kid's face on a damn milk
cart. Yeah, I mean, I wanted to be offended. I just laughed at it, you know.
Because, I don't get it. What is she saying? You were abducting him? Was that the joke?
She was trying, exactly. The joke was she was trying to find out whether or not I abducted him.
It wasn't a joke. She was dead serious.
Yeah, well, yes, she was. She was dead serious. She thought that I had abducted him. She's like, is that your son? And I'm like, yes. But I thought she was just asking, is that your son? To be asking me, oh, it's your son? And she's really going, is that your son? That's the way she meant it. And then when she... But she's flat out said, yeah, I wanted to see whether or not I may have recognized you on America's Most Wanted. I'm like, you thought I abducted him? She's like, well, you never know. I'm like, and to me, that was bold.
It was racist.
It's kind of vigilante. I don't care about the racist part.
I don't know, Reese. Do you think that couldn't have been like a pickup line? She's trying to pick you up?
You know, I wanted to believe that. For years, I wanted to. It's been some 18 years now. I mean, I've wanted to believe that, but I don't know. I'm still a little perturbed at the whole idea. Is that, you know, she was like, is it your son? And I was like, oh, just wondering whether or not, you know. Yeah, he's that doesn't. I mean, to me, it was sort of like a slap in my face saying, he doesn't look like me. Which is the worst thing that a father can hear when you have a child. He don't look like you.
Oh, man.
So you can imagine how put off I was about that.
You know, it's funny. My he's in preschool. He's 3 and a half. His best friend's this black boy named Christian, okay? They're inseparable. And every time I go pick them up and they're playing together, I cannot help but think to myself, how many years is it going to take before it's not cool for these two to hang out together? Because I just have no faith in people that we are going in the right direction when it comes to getting along and being okay with each other. I really don't.
Go beyond that. Go beyond that. There's a deeper question for you that you can help. You can actually combat this, Sal. And mm-hmm. I think this is good, sound advice. Because how old is your son? Like, what was he, about 4?
Not even, 3 and a half.
Oh, okay, 3 and a half. Okay. Well, I'm close. Crap. Okay, all right. He's not at a great age now to talk about race. But here's what your biggest concern is. The biggest concern that you're going to have is when the conversation of race comes up.
No.
Not that conversation. Not the conversation about, why are you different colors than me? Like, why is he dark and I'm not dark like Johnny. Why am I not like olive colored? Like, you know, what? Not that kind of stuff. The conversation of race, which will happen in school. When he goes into his formal learning years in school, they're going to talk about things like race. There's going to be Black History Month. There's going to be Hispanic Heritage Month. Those things are going to come up where he will then have the distinction of race be put on his plate. And that's going to happen at the school. There are one of two things that's going to happen here, Sal, and I know you well enough, so I know it's not going to be the latter here. There will be the parents having the conversation about race first with their child, or it being dictated through our school system. And in the school system, remember what the story they're going to tell when they talk about race. Right. The story's going to be, oh, and blacks were slaves, and blacks were beaten, and blacks got to be freed, and blah, blah. It's going to be a very negative portrayal of blacks in this country, or when I say negative portrayal of whites in this country and what blacks endured, and that quote-unquote white guilt will then sort of be pushed on to your son. here's where you have to combat that by saying, look, a conversation about race has to do with saying that, look, mommy and I we're white, we're Irish, we're Italian, we're Canadian, we're French, whatever. And your friends, they are Jamaican and part Haitian or part Caribbean. And if everyone in the country is a different color, a different background, they have different if you see everybody in the family or everybody that we hang out with in the neighborhood, they're all the same skin color as us. But did you know that John, who lives down the block, his mother is French-Canadian and her father is Italian, and my uncle such and such, you know, he hangs out with us all the time. He's from Ireland, and part of his family is from Scotland. What you'll say is that if you do it the right way, is that everyone is different and they're all facets of one thing. But if you let the school system just break it down to black, white, Latino, black, white, Latino, Asian, and Indian, and have them leave it at that and say there's nothing else, there's nothing broader, there's nothing more nothing more detailed than this, then of course he's just going to live in this world where things are just separated by one color. But you're going to have to tell him that everybody's different.
Close friends, they're a mixed couple, and the husband is Haitian, and he's Yaphet Kotto dark. I mean, he's dark. And my son doesn't even see that, okay? He sees his Uncle Paul. And
right.
I'm not going to worry about it, because if that conversation comes up, and it will, I'm going to say, well, you tell me. Do we ever look at Paul any differently? You didn't know. You never, I'll just bring it up that way. In other words, color is what you make of it. If you want to see color your whole life, it's not going to get you anywhere.
Do it with crayons, Sal. It with crayons. You know, when you take yellow and blue and you mix them together, you get a different color, don't you? Yeah, I mean, it sounds silly, right? But to a kid, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, think about that. Think about the joy that he can find in that yellow and green. If you would sit up there and show him, it says, this is yellow, this is green. If this was Bobby and this was Ann, and I take Bobby and Ann and I mix the two of their colors together, look what they make. They make another great color. Don't you like orange? Oh, I love orange. That's a great color. And then he looks at Ed with amazement. So then when he sees, the Yaphet Kotto guy you were talking about and his wife, and they make a kid, and the kid looks a completely different color, and they go, wow, that's amazing. Look at the great color they made. And to a kid, that's amazing, because then it's not looked at in this ugly way or in this damaging, vicious way that we have to treat each other as separate, or different, instead of finding the joy in that mosaic, so to speak. Kids can understand that a different way than adults can.
No, for sure. For sure.
I mean, it's a brilliant thing for kids to understand. And when another kid can tell another kid that and goes, do you ever wonder why Bobby's mother and father look different than he is? And then he shows them the colors and mix the two together. And he goes, see, that's what happens. Look how amazing that is. And kids look at that, and they're no longer looking at race and just go, when another kid looks at him and just go, yeah, but his father is black and his mother is white. It's like, yeah, but look how cool he looks. Look at his cool hair.
But I got to tell you, man, I don't know what world you're looking at right now. I'm not feeling that vibe of the coloring book lately.
I know, dude.
Yeah, I agree with you to a certain extent, Reese. I mean, kids, when they're young, they don't really know color. I think that the situation Sal was talking about earlier, a kid that young, they don't know the difference between someone with black skin and a white kid with red hair to something that would be new. That would be new to them. Hey, this kid's hair is colored. It's different from everybody else I know. So this kid's skin color is different from everybody else I know. At some point, you're going to have to explain to these kids, the cultural differences, which may be real or which may be imagined by society. But you're going to have to explain and let the kid know what people are going to expect in certain circumstances.
Well, they probably will. They're going to have to learn the cultural differences. But as long as they don't learn the bad cultural differences. I mean, teachers, I don't think are going to show people, like, and black people have children out of wedlock. No, I don't think they're going to do that. I don't think they're going to do stuff like that. But there are people who can tarnish the whole idea, if you get my meaning.
Well, got to be honest. Side shows I enjoy is watching the black Facebook friends who aren't cool with you being a conservative give you grief every now and then about you siding with a white guy or wanting to be a white guy. It's kind of amusing to watch. But are these people you know your whole life, or are these people you've met?
These are people I've known my whole life. I mean, that one particular young lady I've known since I'm 12 years old, since she was 6.
It's good fun.
So, you know, that I get that. I get that all the time. The scary part about it is that they don't even realize that it doesn't involve me. Well, folks, that's our show. I'm going to get kicked off. We will see you guys tomorrow. Same bad time, same bad channel. It's Reese on the Radio. I'll okay. Holla.
I'm furious, leaving you curious. How did he do that? Who that master man with the master plan? Who's thinking faster than the slower?